like building a business in Africa, Nigeria, right? I'll describe it in two ways. It's difficult, but then again, it's full of opportunity. You know, it used to be this thing that they say build it and then they'll come. I don't think so. Like, especially because, like, if you take the time to build it and you expecting them to come, they might have moved on to something else. The first thing you need to do, which is what we talked about earlier, is like the way you think the problem needs to be solved might not be the way another person sees it, right? And the most important factor for me in business, like I've also learned, is the market. If you had the opportunity again, would have built simple first for Nigeria or for Africa, because the type of problem we're solving is purely software. And what we've noticed is that, like, the honest truth is, like, in Nigeria, we really don't pay for software, right? We might think we're doing tech, but most of the businesses that are doing very well, if you look at them, they're mostly like tech-enabled businesses. So let's see.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, to balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hi, Toluwani Kolawole. Welcome to My Tech Journey with Esther podcast. I'm very excited to have you here.
Thank you very much, Esther. Thank you for having me. I'm also excited to be here too.
Yeah, thank you. So before we get started on this conversation, I would just like to introduce Kolawole. I always call him Kola, but his first name is Toluwani. So I'd like to introduce Toluwani to us today. Toluwani Kolawole is the Chief Product Officer and co-founder at Simple, where he leads product innovation. With a background as a senior software engineer at Shara and senior front-end developer at Sumosoft, he's built scalable solutions using React.js and TypeScript. Prior to this, he has held positions as front-end developer at Tuteria and Delivery Science, where he focused on enhancing web development and user experience. Toluwani is a Tech Nation UK global talent, and he brings deep expertise in web development and leadership. So I'm so excited to have you, Kola, join me today for this episode. Yeah, that's a pretty strong biography, and I'm looking forward to us diving into your journey, your story, all the intricacies. But before we jump into the conversation, I always like to play fun games with my guests. So I feel like I've known you, Kola, for like a long time. We attended secondary school and university. So I was thinking, what game can we play together? So I'd like us to play the two truths and a lie game. So it's just a game where you tell me three facts about yourself, and two would be truths, one would be a lie, and I will identify the lie.
Interesting. Okay, so two truths and a lie. Okay. Yeah. This is quite interesting. I've not played this game before, so I just need some time to think.
Two
truths about myself. Okay. I like playing with children. I know how to sing, and I'm a very good basketball player.
I've never seen you play basketball. I've never, and I don't know, for some reason, you don't strike me as one that plays basketball, but at the same time, for you to put it there, it looks like, maybe you know that I don't know this part, so you feel, you feel like, you know, that's the part I'll miss. You say you like playing with children, you said that. What's the second option?
I said I'm a very good singer.
You're a very good singer. I've never heard you sing, too, so it's either you're a very good singer or you're play basketball. I think you look like someone that likes children, so I think that's a fact. I hope so. I'll go with my first intuition. You playing basketball.
Okay, you're very correct, actually. I don't play this game very well.
but you tried. Yeah, at least I had two options. The second one was you probably know how to sing, but like basketball.
I don't know.
Strike me as someone that gist about basketball, you know, the LeBron James.
Exactly. I know the teams, but playing it. No, I don't play.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but that was fun. That was cool. Yeah, that was
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's jump into the conversation. You know, just reading your bio, your career has been heavy on front-end development. So
yeah.
I think the first thing I'm curious about is, have you always known that you'd be involved in web development, or what would you say were the earliest experiences that shaped your career growth?
Okay. So for me, I mean, from the beginning, no, I'll say no, but like my first real experience of like working professionally as a, I'll say like a developer, was from then on was when I knew I was going to, you know, do front end development. So initially, like what got me into like coding and, you know, this whole thing about being a developer was growing up, I still enjoy watching cartoons and playing video games. So I wanted to actually know how to build like video games and cartoons or make cartoons. So I had an uncle then who was studying computer science. And he told me that, oh, like, if you want to build games and, you know, make cartoons, you need to know mathematics and you need to also know how to write programs and stuff. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's what I want to do when I grow up and stuff. And so going to school, studied computer engineering. I mean, I did engineering because my dad is an engineer, but going back now, I think I should have studied computer science, but that's another story for another day. But then again, and then did computer engineering. And after school, my first work experience was at a digital marketing agency in Lekki. And I worked under a guy's name is Joshua. Shout out to Joshua, wherever he is there. So the first day I met Joshua was very interesting because at that time, well, I came from my house on the mainland, which was very far to Lekki, which was on the island in Nigeria. And the first day I met Joshua, the first thing he asked me was, oh, what do I do? Like, what languages are programming? I told him JavaScript. And I was trying to impress him, like, oh, I know JavaScript, HTML, CSS, and, you know, mobile development. At the time, I started dabbling into mobile development. There was something called Codova, which allowed you to bundle HTML, CSS, and JavaScript into mobile apps. So I started learning how to work with that. So I was telling him all those things, and he was just looking at me. And I'm like, why is this guy just looking at me? And then he told me to open my laptop, and I should go to, like, a Facebook career page. And I went there. And then they told me to open like their job opportunities and openings. And he showed me like their mobile developer jobs. And it was like, do I see anything HTML, CSS, JavaScript there? I was like, no, it's just like Java, Objective-C. No, yeah. And all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I was like, and then he asked me a question, which for me was very profound. It was like, my knowledge and my skill level is mostly web development. And I need to make a decision whether I want to do web development or mobile development. And if it's mobile development, I need to drop everything I'm learning and go and, you know, start learning Java, Objective-C, Kotlin and the likes. And then he told me to go home and go and think about it. I was surprised because it was supposed to be my first day like working, and he was like, I should just go home and go and think about it. And that was the end of the meeting. I was like, interesting. And so it was very interesting for me because I had to think about it properly and ask myself, like, do I really want to do web development or mobile development? And at the time, like he said, my skill levels and the things I'd learned were around HTML, CSS, JavaScript, which were the foundations for building web projects and web applications. So I made that decision. And also with the fact that like I enjoyed design to an extent, right? So I was like, okay, you know, let me just do web development. Then the next day I went to see him and I was like, okay, have you made a decision? I said, yes, web development. And then we took it up from there. He, you know, put me through like web development again, even though I had some knowledge, you know, just giving me projects to work on every day, even though we were just toy projects, random projects. And then that's helped me build my skills. And that's how I started the trajectory to being front end and doing web development.
That's very interesting. Just hearing the fact that, you know, someone asked you a question and that made you just reflect on, okay, what exactly do I want to
do?
For a lot of people that come into or are interested in even web development as a thing, I found myself also in these shoes. Like, I want to become a web developer. I want to, you know, do lots of web applications, but I'm struggling with knowing what to learn, or I'm struggling with, you know, the whole information overload out there. How was that experience for you? Like, was this something that, you know, you picked up today and tomorrow you're like, ah, this thing is like confusing me? Or how was that experience for you? Did you just focus on a part, like, okay, I want to learn HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and were you like very serious? How was that for you?
Okay. I can relate actually, because especially for front end, like the JavaScript land, there's a lot of things. Like every day, there's something here, and you're wondering, like, this thing I already know, is this still going to be relevant soon? But for me, I think, again, just going back to the experience I had with Joshua, I think, you know, just what he did for me, which I think is what is profound. And I think that's what, like, people doing like boot camps and stuff is like, he just put me on a path, like a learning path, consistent learning path. For a few months, right? So for me, I saw it as a boot camp where I was just working on like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript projects for like 3 months. I mean, it was very annoying and difficult because it's like I'm just building stuff and then I'm not using it for anything. And you just tell me, okay, go and read this. I remember, you know, every time it was like, there was a time he told me to go and read the entire documentation of Bootstrap, like just go and read it.
And really?
Then, and at the time it was very annoying, but as I then started working on projects and, you know, just, you know, tapping into that knowledge of all the things I'd read for just reading sake and just using it and seeing the outcome and the output, for me was very, very profound, because I was like, okay, so this is what he was actually trying to get me to do. So I think sticking to a consistent, what's it called now? Will I say
learning,
like,
path?
Exactly. Thank you very much. Learning path will really help. I know it's very, very difficult because it's like, oh, there are a lot of things to learn, but if you can just decide, let's say, for example, you want to learn React and just stick to it, I'm sure there are a ton of React resources online that can help you, and, you know, stick on that learning path and just take it for a consistent number of time. I think it will help. But I think the problem most people have is like they start with something and then they jump and jump. Maybe it's because of like fear of missing out, or things are difficult. I mean, everything is difficult, to be honest. You know, I always tell people, like, looking back, like when we're in primary school and we're learning like how to count and how to do like basic arithmetic, it was very, very difficult for us, because at the time it was like, and many of us, our parents would say, well, we're not good in maths. It's not as if we're not good in maths. It's just that like we didn't just enjoy it, and we didn't stick long on that path enough to be able to understand what we're being taught and know it. So if you just spend time with whatever you're learning, over time you just see that you get used to it and you definitely become an expert in it. I know, and you know, these days I always understand the saying that people say, like, practice makes perfect, right? It's like the more you do stuff, the more you get better at it every day, constantly, no matter how difficult it is, no matter how easy it is, whatever, just keep at it, and you'll get better.
Yeah, true. So like consistency and just keeping on that path, like practicing and practicing. Okay. Yeah, that's a very good advice. How many resumes have you sent out with zero response? Or maybe you're getting interviews, but you just can't seem to land a job. I've been there, and I know it's so frustrating, right? But the good news, I've created a toolkit to change all of that for you. Introducing the Get a Job Toolkit, your step-by-step guide to finally land your dream tech job. Inside, you get 3 resume and cover letter templates, a job tracking sheet, 100 plus interview power phrases, reach out messages to recruiters, and a LinkedIn optimization checklist. I created this toolkit because I know how hard applying to jobs can be. So whether you're just starting out your career or making a career switch to tech, this will save you so much time and stress. Click the link below to grab your toolkit, and let's get you hired. And now you're like the co-founder of Simple. So let's get into Simple and talk a bit about it. How would you describe Simple to someone that is not familiar with Simple, and what problem would you say Simple is solving?
Okay. So it's like, I like to describe Simple simply as a communication hub. So basically what it means is like we are building our tools to help businesses communicate with their customers, pretty much. So for us, we see it as two ways, both inbound communication and outbound communication. I mean, that's what communication is. There's two ends, right? You're talking to someone and someone is talking back to you. So what we're doing is building tools to help businesses solve problems they have communicating or interacting with their customers. So the way what we've done is we've built two products. One is an omni-channel inbox that allows businesses to bring in all their, you know, all the channels which they communicate with their customers. So that's more like, or how their customers communicate with them, sorry. So that's inbound communication. So it's email, SMS, Twitter, WhatsApp. You know, we give you just one platform, one dashboard to manage all that interaction. And then we also provide businesses with like SMS and email marketing for outbound communication. So if you want to outreach to your customers, send them emails or SMS. So pretty much simple, is a communication hub for business.
Okay, communication hub for business. Yeah. That sounds really good, but I'm wondering, how did you come up with this idea? I know there are lots of people listening or going to be watching this, and they have an idea for maybe a startup, but they're stuck. They don't know if that idea would work. So how did you come up with the idea of simple and maybe validate it to know that, okay, simple is, or the idea of communication between the customers and a business is something that you want to double down on?
Okay. So the initial idea for simple came from the fact that myself and my co-founder Collins, so we used to be like flatmates, so we used to work on projects a lot together. So because he has like a design background and like sales background, so we just used to work on like projects, like freelance projects together. He would get projects and he would design and I'll write the code. So I think when we thought about the idea for simple, we just wanted to build, because back in the day, this was 2017, 2018, most of the marketing platforms, then SMS marketing was quite big in Nigeria. So most of the platforms were very, very like ugly to use and difficult to use. So what we wanted to initially do was just to build something better than what was available at the time. But then again, we then found something interesting, which was a trend in Nigeria. Well, it's still a trend. I won't call it a trend anymore, but it became a trend at the time in Nigeria, which was, customers began to reach out to businesses online. So, for example, you had an issue with your bank. Typically, back in the day, like way, maybe early 2000s or whatever, right, is you'd send an email or try and reach out there to their contact center via call. But we noticed that people started just coming to Twitter, for example, and, you know, DMing or mentioning the bank's handle. And then people just get their issues resolved as quickly as possible. And so we realized that, like, with the increase in social media usage, people actually started reaching out to businesses directly on social media. So we're like, you know what, this is something that we can try and help businesses with. And then we spoke to some people who were, some of our friends were running businesses, and they were like, this actually makes sense, because for them, everything was fragmented. So there's people reaching out to them on WhatsApp, there's people reaching out to them on Instagram, Twitter, and email as well, right? So, and everything is different apps. So they were like, it will make sense to have something that, you know, solved all that in one place. So for us, the validation for us was, you know, talking to businesses that we knew and, you know, understanding that they had that problem. And also the added advantage we kind of had also was, which I think is very important for people trying to build stuff, is you need to also have some, I would say, skin in the game, because our third co-founder, who's our CTO, Balu, had like a lot of experience building communication systems. So he had built like systems for sending out emails and SMSs to hundreds of thousands of people, like value-added services, all those text messages that you get that says send football to this number to get whatever, right? So he had built like systems around that to send messages to people. So for us, it was like, you know, that, combining that with the validation we got from talking to people and seeing that trend at the time in Nigeria, you know, all those three just accumulating together for us to say, you know what, let's build something that will help businesses solve these problems that they were having. And that's how we came up with Simple.
Yeah, it's so good. You know, I've seen people just come up with ideas, and the idea at that point to them sounds very good. But yeah, I realized they don't really validate it. And it's like, even no matter how great an idea is, if no one is in need of it, is like a waste of time. So I'm glad to hear that, you know, you guys went through a validation state, asking questions, and you also have a co-founder that had skin in the game. So it wasn't just you going into, you know, starting Simple blindly, but you had more or less someone that was very knowledgeable about what you were involved in. And this Simple has done so well. You know, you've pitched to really big startup, like say investing platforms like Techstars, Toronto. So I would like you to walk me through, you know, pitching at Techstars is a huge deal for any startup. So it was very exciting. I think that was in 2022, right?
Yeah,
you pitch. So what was that whole process of applying, interviewing, and prepping to become like Techstars? What was that like for you?
So Techstars was very interesting. I believe we learned a lot, actually. So Techstars is, like you said, they are like, I would say like a VC firm / incubator, right? And they invest in startups. And so we're lucky enough to be selected For Texas, but then Texas has different arms. So the one we went into was Texas Toronto in Canada. So we're, you know, lucky to be part of that program in 2022. I'll say our application for that was a bit, I'll say for us, for me personally, it was a bit straightforward because, we're advised to apply by a co-founder friend of ours and we did. And then, after we applied, someone from their team was in Nigeria at the time. So she came to the office to see us and then we talked, we shared some more of our vision and our goals and what we wanted to do with Simple. And, I believe that conversation also helped to, you know, push our online application as well and made them understand who we were and what we were trying to do. And then, you know, we got into the program. But for me, going through the program was very, very insightful because there were a lot of things that we did, a lot of things that we learned that, you know, helped us on our journey and is still helping us on our journey today. And then in terms of pitching, at Techstars, again, you know, standing in front, I mean, at the time, because of COVID restrictions and all, the world was just opening up and, you know, getting back to normal at the time. So we couldn't really do like a physical, like meet to pitch. So we did an online pitch. And then the Techstars team helped with that. And then we, you know, put that up. But, you know, as we think some things in life, like, you know, telling people about your dreams and aspiration could be nerve wracking sometimes. So, you know, doing the entire pitch was a bit funny for us. But we scaled through that. And then, you know, that helped put us in front of like more investors, you know, more eyeballs on us and what we're trying to do. You know, we got a lot of contacts, especially like investors, people outside Nigeria that were interested in what we're trying to do. We also, got to build relationships with other co-founders who are doing something similar to us in other countries like, Canada, the US, you know. So that was a very, very good experience for us.
Okay, and how was that like? Was it totally virtual or did you have to go to Canada for a while? Like, how did you also interact with other business owners?
Okay, so most of the program was virtual, actually, even though we had the opportunity to go to Canada at the time. But because we had other things we were doing as a business, we're going through kind of like a pivot, I'll say, right? So couldn't really go, but we had the opportunity to go to Canada. But most of the program was online. And then we had like, I think they still do it in Texas. There's this thing called Mental Madness, where for like a month, Mental Madness. It's a very funny name, but it's very interesting. I mean, so the idea is that like you're talking to, so, Texas will, you know, pair you with like over like, I was like 80 mentors. And so for a month, you're talking with them every day. But then it's like speed dating. It's like, so from 9 a.m. to like 2 p.m. every day, you're talking to different people. So like you have like just like 45 minutes every day. And that's why it's called Mental Madness, because it's like crazy fast
really
stuff.
Mad,
like, it's mad. So you're getting advice from a lot of people at once. So it's like information overload in a sense, but then it's left to you to now decide what you want to pick out of those sessions. And they were interesting because we met a bunch of like very, very great people that gave us like good advice, and helped us to, you know, shape and understand a bit more what we're trying to do, but as a business, and also as entrepreneurs, right? Because yes, you're building a business, but there's also you, the individual, which is like things like your mental health, your family, your own dreams and aspirations, and then also the business. So it was a very, very interesting, process for us. And so I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that, you know, they supported you, even though it was intensive, like the support was huge. Yeah. So I'm sure even when you were talking about the experience, you mentioned that it was very insightful for you. So let's talk a bit about how, you know, the influence of Techstars on Simple, and were there any major pivots that you had to do regarding maybe the strategy or to improve the growth of Simple? So what were the things that you benefited from Techstars, and how did you navigate that pivoting?
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so like going through that process of the Mental Madness, and, you know, talking to like people from Techstars and people that were ahead of us in the game and everything, we found out something. So what we're doing at Simple was, in the early days, we started more as a consumer focused product. So we're trying to go direct to the consumer. But then again, we found out over time. I mean, we had already started getting those learnings, but, you know, just going through text has just solidified that for us. Over time, we found out that, like, the people that we got more traction for, the users that we got more traction from, were, you know, businesses, and businesses also specifically in the financial services sector, right? And so just talking to mentors, like explaining to them our journey, what we had seen so far, you know, just, and then them just giving us advice that, you know what, just focus on these guys. These are the guys that are your largest ticket size in terms of money. They're the ones that give you more feedback in terms of your product. Like, instead of trying to, you know, be, you know, consumer focused, like, just focus on these businesses, and not just any business, like financial service businesses, and, you know, just go from there. And for me, that was very insightful, because it's like, you know, it helped us to shift our focus a bit, and, you know, started focusing more on building the product around that, trying to get customers around that specific customer profile, and then just, you know, growing the business from there. And after that program in 2023, you know, we just saw a huge growth in our numbers in terms of, like, revenue and everything, because we just decided to focus on financial services businesses, and, you know, signing up financial services businesses. Our sales efforts were around that, you know, and then, you know, things just started going up from there. And that was very, very interesting.
Yeah. You know, you mentioning mentors and how the mentors were able to give you insights. I think the other day, about 3 days ago, I was watching a podcast, and someone was interviewing a woman, and, you know, she had, like, a mentorship or a coaching program, and she was talking about how, you know, working with her will help you not make so many mistakes. So I'm just, like, echoing what you mentioned having mentors, because there are lots of people, whether as startup founders or even career people, that they're trying to walk their journey alone. They don't have any mentor, they don't have anyone that they look to for guidance, but there's so many mistakes that you would avoid making if you have mentors and people that can you know, guide you and position you in the right pattern for you at Simple. I think that's one of the things you mentioned that you got from Textiles. So but now you are a co-founder, and you're also the chief product officer. So it's like you're wearing two hats at Simple. So how exactly do you balance these roles? Are there some days that you're wearing your co-founder hat? Are there some days that you're wearing your CPO hat? How do you balance these two roles?
You're very spot on, actually. But for me, the way I think I'm always wearing, I mean, yes, there are days when I'm wearing the CPO hat and then the co-founder hat. But these days, especially like this year, I've been wearing mostly the co-founder hat. And that's because, like, you know, apart from just being a CPO, I also kind of, like, manage the operations of the business, but from a higher level. So, like, managing, like, you know, accounts, payroll, and all things tied to operations. And then because of my role as a CPO, I also work closely with, like, the marketing team, the sales team, and also the operations team. Cause so for the sales team, for example, they are the ones, you know, they talk to the customers and they are the ones selling the product, right? So they say, okay, this is what we are seeing in the market. This is what customers are saying. So I have to work with them closely to understand. Sometimes I actually jump on sales calls as well to, you know, just listen to what the customers are saying about the product. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of working with the marketing team too, is like, you know, doing things around, like, product marketing, email sequences that have to go out to customers, all that type of stuff, you know, crafting some form of the messages that have to go on the website or whatever content that we're trying to put out, you know, so that making sure that, like, on the product side, what we are trying to do on the product side is easily understood by the marketing team, so that they can also, you know, communicate that to the customers. So it's not easy, but, like, it's enjoyable at the end of the day, because for me, it helps me to work with everybody on the team, and it can also help, and that also helps to build, like, relationships with team members as well. So it's quite interesting.
So if you have to put, like, a percentage, like, out of 100, what's the percentage? Is it a 50-50 split? I used to put more on one.
I'll say it's more like a 60-40. A 60-40, because I'm more on the CPO side, And then the 40% is just more on the operational side in terms of like co-founder things and like having meetings with my other co-founders in terms of strategy and all that. I mean, for us, because we are like, we're friends. So like almost every call we have is like a meeting about the business. So it's like,
and imagine it tends to, because there's, if you're friends and you're also co-founders, almost like when you pick up your call, okay, guy, how far? This is that. So we just start talking about business.
Exactly. Like, oh, how fun, or like, oh, how's life and everything? And we're talking about life.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's true. I have this meeting, or I have to do this thing that we need to do so that this customer will have this thing. So it's always interesting.
Yeah, and then in terms of like,
in terms of like the operational things, 40%, I'll say, you know, payroll, accounting, and all those things, 40%.
Okay. And as a CPO, what would you say is your approach to product development? How do you ensure that, you know, your product meets both the user's needs and it also meets the business goals? Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business, you need to make money. So how do you do that balance?
That's a very good question, actually. So for me personally, I strive to always, you know, make sure that we try and, you know, meet the user's goals. Because if you don't have users, you don't have a business, to be honest. Like, if nobody's using your product or your application or whatever, your idea, you don't have a business, you can't make money, right? And then for the business goal, like you rightly said, is ultimately, right, is a business. And what is a business? You're trying to make money. That's just the honest truth, right? I mean, so you're trying to make money, but then you're trying to make money in two ways. Not spend the money that you're making, like, lavishly or in the wrong way, and then also bring more money into the business, right? And then everything you are doing as a business, for me, should be tied around the user, right? So in terms of my product development strategy or ideologies, like whatever you're doing, try to capture the user's needs, and try and solve for those needs. So I always try to use the jobs to be done framework to kind of understand, okay, what these customers or this user that we're trying to build whatever we're building for, what is the job they're trying to achieve? What are they trying to solve, right? And then from there, it's like, okay, what are the things that we can build around this? Obviously, as a product team, you have your hypothesis on what you think the user wants, but most times your hypothesis are not right. So what we try to do is we build around our hypothesis, you know, and then we also then talk to our customers, right? And so when we talk to them, we gather feedback and then come back to build. And then after building, we then go back to them and say, okay, this thing you say you're trying to solve, we've built something around it. Please play with it for a while. Let us know your feedback. If it doesn't make sense, let us know. If it makes sense, let us know. And then, you know, so we just try to go through the entire feedback loop of, you know, building stuff, getting customer feedback, then iterating on it over and over till we get to a desired point. And then in terms of meeting the business goals, is that like, okay, this thing that we're building, right, we've seen that there's traction. Okay, users are excited about it, or it solves their problem. Is the other part of it, which is for me is the business goal, is now saying, how do we extract the value for us as a business in terms of how do we make money from this? Because it's all well and good to, you know, provide value for people and, you know, everybody's fine, their problems are being solved. But then again, you need to find a way to make money from that, which is what you're trying to do as a business. So one thing, again, for me personally, on my journey as a co-founder that I'm learning is that, like, I mean, ideas are great. Building products is beautiful, but you need to actually, what is also important is actually the business side of things, because you need to put food on your table and the table of your employees, right? So whatever you're building, you should also be thinking about the business element of how do we extract value from our customers that we are providing value to for us as a business, so that we can keep the lights on and, you know, continue running as a business.
Yeah, that's spot on. I like it. And, you know, I stumbled on a quote by Wandy Lee. So Wandy Lee is managing partner at Rook Digital. So I have the quote here. I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
It says, many strategies that have worked elsewhere have failed in Africa because investors fail to recognize that Africa has a very different landscape. So why I said this quote is to follow up on the question, which is, how would you describe running a business in Africa? Simple is a business that is primarily based in Africa. So how would you describe how the terrain has been so far?
Okay. Yeah. So Simple is, yes, that's a very, very good question. And It's very interesting. Like building a business in Africa, Nigeria, right? Is I'll describe it in two ways. It's difficult, but then again, it's full of opportunities, right? So I'll say it's diff I'll start with being difficult. Like the honest truth is, especially in Nigeria, like with the economic downturn and everything that's going on, things are a bit difficult. And for a business like ours, which is we are B2B, we work with businesses, is like if they are not making money, it will be difficult for us to make money. That's the honest truth, right? So we need to always find innovative ways to help them save money, right? Or make money. And that's a bit difficult. And like the quote you shared is quite true. Like business running a business in Africa is a different terrain from what you have, abroad, in the US or in the UK or in Canada, right? So it's very difficult because then again, because customers know that things are difficult in the economy. They are very, very shrewd with their money. So, you need to be doing something really good, things that are either saving them money or making them money before they can part ways with, their own money for you as a business. And then also in terms of full of opportunities is the fact that like for me, from my own experience, what I've seen is that like there are still a lot of problems that technology can solve in Africa and in Nigeria that needs to be solved, right? And so there are a lot of opportunities. It's just that you need to be mentally prepared because of the difficulty. And also you need to be financially prepared. You need to have some good backing also in terms of like, because it's, for me, it's a long-term game. You might not be able, you might not see the, what's it called now? The successes immediately. You have to, stay in the game for a bit, before you start seeing actually like fruits and then just keeps on growing and growing and growing. And then another thing too, also in terms of like difficulties, like, especially in Nigeria, Simple is a purely like software business, right? So everything we are building is like software, right? And Nigerians generally don't, pay for like subscriptions. Typically, if we're in the US or the UK, we'll just build like a subscription and, people pay. So what we decided to do was like our marketing arm, our marketing product is like it's pay as you go. Which is kind of what people are already used to in Nigeria with airtime and stuff like it's pay as you go, right? But then the omnichannel inbox is more like subscription because we try to push that not just only in Nigeria, but outside Nigeria as well. So those are the ways we've tried to balance it and also overcome those difficulties.
And are there any mistakes that you look back and feel like, okay, and well, I say you've been running Simple for nearly 3, 4 years now, right? Or how many years have you been?
Yeah,
So are
4 years.
there any, okay, 4 years. So are there any things that you look back and you're like, this was probably not a right move. Maybe we shouldn't have made this decision when we made it. What are some of the mistakes that you've made in business that you would like to share?
Okay. So I think one of the major ones that we're still coming out of, to be honest, was last year. I think the mistake was, you remember earlier I mentioned that like we got some insight from Techstars and it helped us with our growth, right? I think we were not like super prepared for the growth that we experienced because we took on, I think for us is we took on more than we could chew at the time, without laying the foundations for those things, right? So at the time, initially, our marketing platform, like I said, is pay as you go, right? So initially, we always used to do it as prepaid. So if you want to, let's say, for example, send email to 5,000 people, you pay for that 5,000 immediately. But again, working with financial services and banks, mostly banks, right? The way banks operate in Nigeria is the way they work with their vendors, they do more like postpaid. So you give them the service and then they pay for it after. And so we took on a few banks, thinking that we were ready for that scale, but at that time we were not ready. So it actually came to bite us, and we're just coming out of that. But then for us, it's just like we just learned from that experience in that like whatever, especially when it's time to scale, right? You need to make sure you have the foundations right, before you then, can then scale up. Yeah. So that was something we learned.
Yeah, that's definitely useful. And for you as a co-founder, someone that has been part of a growing, startup in Africa, what would you say are some of the things, I would say 2 to 3 things that you've learned so far on your journey, that experience, so to say, has taught you? Maybe some things are common, you know, phrases that are not necessarily true. When you're doing the business, in reality, they're not true, but people are just used to saying it. But in whatever form, what are the things that you've learned in your journey as a startup founder?
Okay. I think there's one that I've learned and I always try to live by is, I think there's this saying, I don't know if it's still valid to now, but it's like, you know, there used to be this thing that they say, build it and then they'll come. No, I don't think so. Like, especially because, like, if you take the time to build it and you expecting them to come, they might have moved on to something else, or in terms of like another product, or they might not have that problem anymore. So you'd have just spent time building stuff that people will not need, right? So for me, is the first thing you need to do, which is what we talked about earlier, is like get validation, right? Yes, you have an idea, you've seen the problem, and you've seen that, okay, if I build this solution, it will most likely solve the problem. But then again, the thing is, you need to actually go and actually ask the people that have the problem. I mean, you might have the problem. I mean, you know, people always say that the best types of companies or solutions are the ones that you have individually as the founder or the owner of this thing, because you know the problem and you can solve, right? But those problems that you have that you don't individually have the problem, it's always best to actually go and talk to the customers. And even those problems that you have that you individually, you know, experience as well, you need to actually go and talk to other people, because the way you think the problem needs to be solved might not be the way another person sees it, right? And the most important factor for me in business, like I've also learned to, is the market, right? The market is the most important. You know, it still ties back to also another lesson that we've learned at Simple. It's like, I think one other lesson we've learned is that, like, maybe if we had the opportunity again, we would have built Simple first for Nigeria, for Africa, because the type of problem we're solving is purely software. And what we've noticed is that, like, the honest truth is, like, in Nigeria, we really don't pay for software, right? We might think we're doing tech, but most of the businesses that are doing very well, if you look at them, they are mostly like tech-enabled businesses. So let's say, for example, like, you know, Childeck and all Paystack. Like, Paystack is just enabling payments, right? So they're tech-enabled. Sure. But Simple, for example, is mostly a software business. Like, we're giving you software to go and use to send email. We're giving you software. Like, you can't send email normally, like, obviously you can send a letter, but nobody sends letters, this, right? So you can't send email normally, you need a software for that. So Simple is a software business, and the best way to price software business is by you know having subscription, because that gives you you can make more money that way, right?
And money, for, yeah.
And in Nigeria, like, the honest truth is that we don't have the subscription culture yet. And so that's another lesson that we've also learned, is like, the market is very important. So whatever you're trying to build, you need to first of all understand the market, right? And, you know, as techies, developers, designers, you know, we always, you know, into the building the product, this thing. I would advise you not to do that. Like, if you don't have the strength of, you know, talking to customers, maybe you get a co-founder that can actually go and do that, you know, and you also go with them, so you can actually understand the customer. Understanding the market is very, very important. So those are some of the lessons I've learned, and I feel that, you know, others can take something from.
Yeah, understanding the market is so important, because if no one is, like, using what you're building, it's just a waste of time. Yeah. So finally, Kola, how exactly do you motivate yourself? Because, you know, you're doing so many things at the same time. So how do you take that break to motivate yourself and also balance your life with other things, family, you know, other things outside of work? How do you motivate yourself and stay balanced?
Okay. In terms of, like, balance and work-life balance, honestly, that's just something I'm learning how to do, because, like, I'm always working. I don't know, I work a lot, but thankfully I have my wife, who is always helping me to, you know, make sure that I take out time to rest, to actually spend time with family and friends and stuff. Another way I try to, you know, enjoy myself is, you know, actually these days, what I try to do is actually make sure I go and visit my family members, like my uncles, my aunties, like my parents, spend time with my brothers and all, and my friends as well. So whenever I have the opportunity, or I just try and make out time to actually just see my friends and my family, especially my family, because they are quite important for me. So that's how I try to balance it out. And in terms of what, you know, keeps me motivated, I think for me, two things is my faith, my faith in God. I take my faith very seriously, and I believe it's something that helps me to try every day to become a better person. And then also I try to stay very curious. So curiosity is another thing that, helps me, keeps me motivated, because I always try to stay curious about, okay, what is actually happening, not just in tech, but like in the world, like where I live, like what's going on. So my curiosity out of, because of that, I've started developing certain habits, like, taking walks just to see around me where I live, like explore new places, just walk, can walk for like 2 hours just randomly. So that's how I try to keep balance and stuff.
That's definitely interesting. I probably should try walking some days. Yeah, hopefully when the weather is really good. Yeah, but this has been a very fun conversation, Kola. Thank you so much for, coming on the podcast,
Thank you
sharing
for
your
having me.
journey, how you're building Simple and, your personal life. And really, thank you for all the insights that you shared. I'm sure a lot of people listening have gotten a couple of things from your story that they can apply to their own lives as well. Yeah, so thank you
Thank you.
for joining us and tuning in to this episode of the podcast. And till next time, keep building, keep learning, and yeah, keep churning the path for your own tech journey as well. And I'll see you in another episode. Bye.
Right, thank you.